You're listening to the MoneyWeb Now podcast series with Simon Brown. Live streamed every weekday at 6:30 a.m.
It's Tuesday, 8 June. I'm Simon Brown, coming at you live and loud from the MoneyWeb studios in Gauteng, Johannesburg. On the show today, chatting with Viv Govender from Rand Swiss, that Thungela listing. I mean, we know coal is end of life longer term, but is there perhaps something there, or do we just leave it alone? Results from Sirius Real Estate, and then talking around township malls and how they are booming even under COVID. Morning headlines for MoneyWeb: Anglo's coal spin-off list debuts at 25 Rand. Well, there's a short seller out there. Boatman Capital issued a report basically saying its value is zero due to underestimated rehabilitation costs. Business Day, First Rand profit adds to signals of faster recovery. The banking group is looking for HEPS to be about a third higher as consumers are out there paying their loans and spending. Morning markets, US was mixed, the S&P off 0.1%, NASDAQ up 0.5%. Asia's red, Sydney down 0.1%, and Tokyo's down 4 points, which is 0.01%. Commodities mixed overnight, gold a little stronger, $1,899 an ounce. Rand, 13.53 against the dollar, and top 40 looking, it's going to open up 10 points. Let's call that a flat opening for our local market.
MoneyWeb Now on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Viv Govender, portfolio manager at Rand Swiss. Viv, morning. Appreciate the early morning. The Thungela listing yesterday. This is the demerger of Anglo American's thermal coal assets. I mean, short answer is we know that, I don't know, in the next 50 to 100 years, coal will pretty much be done as an energy source. Is there an investment opportunity in the shorter term? The market cap yesterday was only about three times their EBITDA profits.
Oh yes, most certainly. If you had to look at the pricing of some of these unattractive in terms of social consciousness assets, mm-hmm. often you find them to be quite good money spinners, like you say. I mean, it reminds me of the case for cigarettes. It actually drives away the bigger institutional investors. It drives away a lot of competition in terms of, people that want to invest in that particular asset, which often turns that asset into a good buy effectively. And so it is possible if you just look at it from a pure, objective, without a thought about social consciousness or climate change or anything, it probably does on average make them better investments than the general market.
Yeah, but as you point out, not very ESG because they don't have much of the environmental there. We're seeing trading updates coming out of banks thick and fast. Standard Bank last week, First Rand yesterday. They're looking good on the surface. I was chatting with Chantal Marx last week and she was pointing out price to books are really cheap. The problem for banks, though, of course, is increased regulation, reduced ROEs as a result, cost to income ratio is higher. Is this a sector that even with the regulatory environment is offering value, or does that regulatory environment make it just that they're going to constantly be squeezed by regulators and increased in costs?
Yeah, look, I mean, after 2008, I always thought the banking sector was not going to recover fully. It's very difficult to make money when you rely on regulation to function, and the regulator has come on and said, you're making too much money. Mm. It has been a tough, decade or so in terms of just how these banks operate. And going forward, I'm also not so positive on the banking sector as a whole, of banks individually, sorry, the banking sector as a whole, but banks individually, because I think this is one sector that's very, very ripe for disruption. If you look at the way banks operate, the banks, the Standard Bank, APSA, kind of operate the same way they've done for the last 100 plus years. But if you think about it, technology has opened up a huge amount of opportunity for small disruptors to enter the market. If it wasn't for steep regulation, I mean, you probably would have many of these big banks having real trouble at the moment, because it's quite conceivable to have a totally online bank where everything is done by your iPad or your laptop or whatever it may be. No branches, no people's physical presence and all the cost savings that come along with it. You know, that also means that you're going to charge lower fees, et cetera, et cetera. But, you know, obviously that is being held back to a certain extent by the fact that regulation in the sector is incredibly high.
Yeah, and that disruption comes from, I mean, we've got the telcos with their money. We've got crypto space, which is, I suppose, disrupting it at the same time. You know, Capitec was an initial disruptor, but in a sense, I can even see ultimately them being disrupted out, as you point out, a purely virtual bank, different ways of transacting and kind of eating the lunch of the 100-plus-year business models of the traditionals.
Oh, yeah, most certainly. Look, I mean, if you think about it, if you had to design a bank from scratch right now, the idea of a teller would not come into place. You know, it just doesn't make sense. I mean, you could do your money transmission on ATMs, even just use the shopping, you know, tools, facilities that, as your cash payouts if you want to. It would be a very different operation. And if you think of the cost structure of your ideal new bank, it would be far, far cheaper than the traditional banking system that we have right now.
But I love that point. If you were to design a bank from scratch, you're not going to be anywhere near a bank as they exist right now. Viv Govender, Portfolio Manager, Rand Swiss, appreciate the time. Our poll today on our social media, LinkedIn, Twitter, Facebook, we're asking, and coal miner listing on the JSE, is it demerged? Is there an investment case? I like Viv's point. Certainly, coal will be gone in the next, I don't know, 50, 100 years. But in the meantime, is there perhaps decades of profits there, or do you agree with the idea that there is the biggest short ever? You can give your view LinkedIn, Twitter, or Facebook.
Business, finance, and investment news. MoneyWeb Now with Simon Brown on the Money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Andrew Coombs, he's CEO of Cirrus Real Estate. Results for year-end March. We saw like-for-like book value up 11.5%, net loan-to-value 31.4%, HEPS up 25.3%, and total dividend for the year up 6.4%. Andrew, appreciate the time. Looking at your results, and this was during the hardest of the lockdown, this is from 1st of April, it's almost difficult to see the impact of the pandemic. This talks partly to Cirrus, but it also talks partly to the German state, the German economy, and healthcare system.
It's certainly true that Germany is, you know, particularly resilient, that it has a very, very good medical system, and that there are a number of things that have really helped, not least their structure of 16 federal states and the way that's been used to distribute subsidies to businesses. So there's absolutely no doubt that, you know, Germany has, you know, saved for a rainy day in terms of, you know, its GDP, etc. And has been able to deploy that capital now during the pandemic to help things. I would like to think that Cirrus's business model and platform has also helped, but there is no doubt if that model or platform had been in an economy other than Germany, then the results probably wouldn't be as favourable as they are.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it is a different, I mean, you know, a lot of things will think another real estate business, but Cirrus is very, very different. You're carefully located, sort of oftentimes on the edges of towns or in industrial nodes. And you've got some anchor tenants, but your focus is actually on SMEs, and, you know, getting those leads in and then converting them. I'm looking at a presentation where you, if I look at your inquiries, your viewings and your new deals, for the current financial year versus the previous, as a rule, they were up. And that does speak to that business model of attracting the interest of potential customers and converting.
Yeah, I mean, Cirrus is not like a conventional property company. Of course, we think about our balance sheet, our properties, but we get much closer to our tenants than a traditional property business would do. You know, we have nearly 300 employees, you know, over 60 different locations, over half of them are based on the same premises that our tenants are based on.
Yeah.
And unlike a lot of property companies, as well as concentrating on the property, you know, we liaise regularly with our customers. We get very close to them. We design propositions that are based around the customer rather than the property. And that has helped us enormously with our customers during this pandemic. In particular, it's helped us collect the payments and the rent from those customers because it's meant we were communicating with them from the beginning of the crisis rather than many landlords who only really spoke to their customers after they'd run out of money and were delivering news to landlords that they simply couldn't pay their bills.
Yeah, and that communication, I imagine, as you point out, face-to-face, not an anonymous email suddenly arriving. You've got, I mean, you've got some 50-odd large tenants. They're about just over half of your space. But in terms of numbers, it's SMEs. And yeah, in South Africa, I think we think SME, we think startup, we think high failure rate. The German economy is frankly built on SMEs. This might be a small micro-enterprise, but it might also have a 50-year track record.
Absolutely, and we've got tenants, you know, who started as micro SMEs with us 10 years ago, you know, who are now companies that are employing 400 or 500 people. We have seen, you know, SMEs that have joined us and remain static. We have sometimes seen people that have, you know, fallen into difficulties. But sure. In the vast majority of cases, we've provided an environment that's enabled SMEs to grow. And both, you know, the SME and Sirius have benefited from that.
And you brand the business as I mean, part of it is Sirius. I mean, I would, if you know, I was looking at your website. It's in German, but I, you know, Google translates for me. I mean, it's a well known brand within the broader German economy.
Yes, Sirius is the overriding brand. We have products that sit within Sirius, but Sirius is the overriding brand. The business parks are branded outside as Sirius, and you know, we have staff on those parks who are associated with that Sirius brand. Prior to the pandemic, you know, we had a situation whereby over 15,000 people in Germany per day were setting foot on Sirius business parks in Germany and being exposed to that brand. So, you know, Sirius is something that Germans know. They associate it with the outside of town. And, you know, throughout the pandemic, I'm glad to say that our reputation with our tenants, you know, has only grown in stature.
And the German economy itself, I mean, Germany is in many senses the heart of the European economy, especially post-Brexit. I think we can say that fairly confidently. I mean, and you make a comment in the results that actually the idea to shorter supply chains and frankly more production happening sort of onshore within the borders of Germany after what we've seen post-pandemic or during the pandemic is going to help the German manufacturing economy and obviously play directly into your own business model?
We think it will. You know, the number of people now, light and heavy manufacturers, who are talking to us about, you know, factory space, storage space, you know, the need to bring more component parts to Germany earlier on in the manufacturing process. You know, everything from COVID to Brexit to, you know, the problems in the Suez Canal, you know, and the fact that right now there is a serious shortage of containers to put things in order to ship them, means that people, rather than relying on a just-in-time intercontinental supply chain, have become absolutely focused on, how do I get this within Europe? How do I base this within Europe? How do I get as much of this to hand in Germany as quickly as possible? Because what everybody is saying is today it's COVID, but tomorrow it will be something else. And we've got to be prepared for it. And that means having it here in Germany, close to the place where the component parts are put together.
Well, there, that's Andrew Coombs. He's a CEO, Cirrus Real Estate. Really, really impressive year-end results to March. Andrew, appreciate the time.
MoneyWeb now, on the money. Also available on podcast.
Chatting now with Marianka Victor. She is CEO and Cora Property Group. They're developing some township malls. We've chatted a little bit before with some of the listed companies around sort of the growth in township. Marianka, morning. Appreciate the time. I mean, one of the things, you know, if I'm in Sandton or Rosebank, pretty much any which way I turn, I'm going to be looking at a mall. It's either a mall or it's going to be a giant sort of, you know, office building and the like. But as soon as I start moving into the townships, I mean, typically there aren't any malls in the townships, yet there is undoubtedly a market. There are customers there who are needing to travel, and that's the opportunity you and your team have spotted.
Yes, absolutely, Simon. I think there's a massive untapped market in these township areas. The one thing to keep in mind is that the income level of these townships are a lot lower than mm-hmm. your urban areas. So the product that we need to offer in these areas to actually benefit the communities look quite different to what you would see in the urban areas. And one of the key aspects that we've seen in the market has really been that, you know, there's a limited tenant pool or choice of tenants in these areas that actually capitalize on these markets. But yes, that's absolutely what we're doing.
You say a limited tenant pool, and I get your point 100%. That said, there is a tenant pool. I mean, there is. I mean, you've got Pick and Pays, you've got Mr. Price's, Ackerman's, Peps, you've got Cashboards, a KFC. There are still a large part of our retail environment which looks at a lower LSM customer and says, yep, there's a business there, and we're going to service it.
Absolutely. I think the challenge is they need a certain LSM group. So a lot of these townships that we do explore, and we find that there is definitely a need. A lot of these consumers or customers in these areas travel as far as 60 to 100 kilometers to get to the nearest mall, costing them nothing less than 80 to 150 rand just to get to the mall closest to their township. However, what we find as a challenge, if I can just jump into challenges immediately, is that, you know, if we look at a PEP and an Ackerman's as a comparison, we find that the PEP will say yes immediately because they've already tapped into that market, whereas an Ackerman's needs a slightly bigger income pool. So it gets quite complex when you go into the tenant mix in more detail to see exactly which tenants say yes and which take a bit more of a population before they actually come on board.
And truthfully, I mean, this is, you know, I mean, almost in a cliched sense, I mean, this is services to the community that if you're not having to travel that distance and spend that money, you're now going to spend it in the community at the mall or, you know, and the like, and therefore, and if anything, it actually increases economic activity in that township. And obviously, I mean, with that comes employment and all the other benefits.
Absolutely. I think that's really our heart behind what we're doing is we've seen massively that there's a lack of basic services in these areas. And, you know, it's anything from just the availability of electricity to water. Mm-hmm. So the moment a development is done in these areas, you immediately bring these services to the community. Our malls include Wi-Fi and various solutions for these communities that actually benefit them. I guess the question is, you know, how we make these township malls work, because they do look very different from the urban malls. They are they're quite smaller in size compared to urban areas. And where there is a massive population, believe it or not, there's already some of the big property developers that have built malls there.
Yeah.
So really the gap we've seen in the market is going into a smaller open strip mall, very similar to what we've just done in Randfontein with Umpakati Mall, which is a 10 to 14,000 square meter mall with all your basic tenants. What we're aiming for is that we can bring more of these malls to bigger areas within South Africa, but also a variety of tenants. In the future.
Yeah, and it is, as you said, they're a little smaller, they're open malls, and the conversations I've been having with the listed REITs on the JSE has all been is that those are the malls which have survived, even in the urban areas, have survived way better during the pandemic and certainly serving a market. We'll leave that there. Marianka Victor, CEO and Cora Property, Township Malls. I think there's a lot more growth potential in that space. That's the show for today. Remember yesterday on our poll, the G7 proposing a 15% minimum tax rate for corporates. And we asked you, would it work? Is there a possibility that this can happen? And the way they're designing it is that they're saying is, you know, the tax rates for all G7s are much higher, but the corporates effectively pay less. And they've put T's and C's. Is your margin more than 10%, etc.? So complex and needs to go to the G20, seemingly, for approval. But just around a third of you you were saying, nope, this has got no chance. Around a quarter were saying, yep, this is about time. Absolutely, corporates need to pay their tax. And then a bunch of you, the majority of you, were saying corporates will just move. One of those island states that exists solely to help people avoid tax. I suspect you might be right about that. A new poll today on our LinkedIn, our Twitter, and our Facebook. Go and have a look. Go and have a vote. Go and have your say. That's it. We are live every weekday morning on the MoneyWeb website and the app, 6:30 a.m. Podcast available from just after 7. Huge thanks to my team, Eddie, Kudora, Nicole, to you for listening, my guests for their early morning contributions. My name is Simon Brown. This is MoneyWeb Now. We'll chat again tomorrow.
You've been listening to another MoneyWeb Now podcast, posted every weekday at 7 a.m. on moneyweb.co.za. MoneyWeb Now, on the money.